Welcome to Clover Club, a podcast about curious conversations and stories intended to make you laugh and learn. I'm your host, Erica, and today I'm so excited to be joined by Mark. Tell us in the Southern and tell us in the Italian.
Di Natale or Di Natale?
Di Natale. I like both.
Yeah, me too.
I like both. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
I'm so glad to hear it. And thanks. I'm so appreciative of you taking some time out of your schedule to join me on Clover Club.
Thank you for having me. I don't know why we're here, but I'm happy to be here.
We're going to find out together.
Great.
So Mark and I share a neutral friend.
A neutral. He's neutral.
He's neutral.
Neutral.
He's also a mutual friend, Nick Pantano, who I have an episode with about his business, Soundspace. And Soundspace started off at something called the Goat Farm, which a lot of people listening probably have at least heard that term, but you are a goat farm guy.
Yeah.
Like one of the goat farm guys.
Yeah.
So that's what we're here to talk about, Mark.
Okay, great. Oh, the goat farm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fond in my heart. I'm one of the founding team of the goat farm back in 2009. It's been around for a little bit longer than that.
What, will you tell us? Because I don't know this. When was it officially like formed?
Yeah, in 2009.
Oh, okay.
Was when it was officially formed.
Okay.
And the name, we decided to stick with the name shortly thereafter, 2010, 2011, because everyone knew it.
Yeah.
As were
there,
the goat farm.
And there were goats.
Yeah, there's a story about the goats. Goes something like this. back when the old owner, he bought it in like the 60s out of foreclosure from the city of Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
And he ran his metalworking company there.
Okay.
He got cited by the city of Atlanta for having kudzu growing over onto public right-of-ways.
Okay.
And rather than just cut the kudzu, he decided to get about a dozen goats to eat the kudzu.
Love it.
And then the city came out and said, great, you solved the kudzu issue, but we're going to fine you for having a dozen goats on your property. Not fenced in, and they keep getting loose. So the character that was there before we got there and took the namesake kept the namesake going, he's quite a character. Lots of stories there.
I could only imagine. So all of the historical-looking buildings and stuff, are those from when it was for the metalworks?
Those were built in 1889.
1889?
Yeah, through 1910.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they used to build Eli Whitney machines there.
Oh, my God.
Originally, it was the E. Van Winkle Gin and Machine Works. And they used to build the old gins for the family farm.
That's awesome. I had no idea.
Yeah. There's still some of them around.
Yeah. Okay. So 2009, you moved to the goat farm.
Yes.
Okay.
Fresh out of the Peace Corps.
Okay. Oh, cool.
And part of the Peace Corps' mission is to bring home back to your community, what you learned when you were overseas.
Yeah. Where were you stationed?
I was in Panama, in central Panama, in a little town called Ojo de Agua.
Cool.
The Eye of the Water, for those that don't speak Spanish. And I was teaching organic agriculture.
Okay.
Up there.
Is that what you studied in college?
Nope.
Okay.
No, I did not. But I could teach organic agriculture, and they trained me in it.
Okay.
And I taught English as well. And then really I was connecting the coffee farmers to resources. I was a facilitator.
Okay.
Connecting them to resources that I had more access to.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to get, their products into bigger markets, stuff like that. But anyway, came back to Atlanta and brought the Peace Corps mission home, and I looked for a place I could start some urban farms.
Yeah.
And at that time, the goat farm had like 12 acres. And so I moved there, met the owners, and kicked it off.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So talk to me about what your first role there entailed.
My first role there was I was farming, and then I started the coffee shop, which we called the War Horse, as a community center, kind of a place for people to meet, because there wasn't anything like that over there. And then we started from there. A whole bunch of artists were moving there,
mm-hmm.
and trained in community organizing, and so we started to organize events. And that's where I started.
Yeah, was there always, knowing what the goat farm has turned into, was that always the goal, or was it sort of something that organically kind of just evolved into what it has become?
Yeah, it organically evolved. So the original people who bought it, Anthony and Chris,
mm-hmm.
they bought it as just a traditional kind of real estate deal.
Okay.
But this was in 2008.
Uh-huh.
And that was not a great time for a real estate deal.
Yes.
because it, you know, all came crumbling down. But they went through with it anyways, and they didn't know what to do with it because they couldn't get financing. You know, they couldn't. All they could do is hold.
Yeah.
Right. And so I was their first tenant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's cool. There were a few people who stayed through, a few really great artists who stayed through, but I was their first new tenant.
Okay.
And they were just like, anyone, like, can we fill this up so we can pay our taxes kind of thing? And then artists started moving there, and we started organizing the community, and with the Warhorse little tiny, like, secret coffee shop.
Yeah.
Where we roasted our coffee the back, but we only served it black.
Nice.
Or Vietnamese coffee. It was one of the two.
Oh, wow. Two polar differences.
Yeah, may or may not have milk. and it was pay what you want, pay what you will.
I love that.
Yeah. And then artists started showing up, having events, programming, and that led to more artists showing up. And so that was kind of the genesis of it, was was like a feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
Between the community and the art events, and then people moving there, interest in moving there. And so the Goat Farm put me through business school.
Wow.
Graduate school.
Cool.
And I studied social enterprise.
Okay.
In graduate school in Atlanta and Copenhagen. And
awesome.
And so we developed a business model that was already kind of forming.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we just kind of formalized it into a social enterprise where, you know, we take a portion of everybody's rent.
Yeah.
And then we put that into an arts fund that then there's a committee that then curates that money into arts programming and art installations. And we don't extract value or take money to do any of those things.
Yeah. Looking back, was there a particular event or moment where you're like, oh, that was the turning point? Like when we pulled off X, it really kind of skyrocketed things.
I would say there was a few events. One was the like Scout Mob Halloween.
Oh man, Scout Mob!
Yeah,
does that even still exist?
No, they went under.
Okay.
I think the guy started. He started. What's that co-working space called?
WeWork.
No, not that. No, not WeWork. That guy went down in flames. No,
yeah.
The Atlanta one. Switch Arts. They sold Scout Mob, I think, and then the guy who ran Scout Mob started Switch Yards, and the person who helped us curate for Scout Mob, the Scout Mob Halloween events, came to work for us.
Oh, that's so
Allie,
cool.
Allie Bashuk, yeah.
Okay. I think I've met Allie before.
Yeah,
that
probably.
That sounds really familiar,
because
I've spent many a Halloween at the Goat
Farm,
and those parties were so fun.
Yeah, they were really fun. They, you know, I'll never forget the moment, like, during one of them, we had Itch.io, which is this, like, you know, 18 to 20 member marching band, but they're, like, a dark marching band.
Oh.
And they were up on stage playing, and there was Saya, which no longer exists, but they were a theater company, an experimental theater company.
Uh-huh.
They had an actress like in this huge tub of
tomatoes,
milk, and she was topless, and she had a head gown on, and she was acting like she was a goddess,
uh-huh.
And she was raised right in the center. And then there was a huge astronaut puppet that was probably like, you know, 18 feet tall that came into the to the building, and then there were two smoke ring cannons on either side, so people were shooting smoke rings into the center, and it was just bananas.
That's awesome.
And that was kind of the moment I was like, yeah, this works.
Yeah.
This is working.
Was there a year there where there was some sort of, I think it was Halloween, but there was like some performance piece component where somebody was like rolling around on like, it was either like peaches or tomatoes?
Yeah. That wasn't... Oh, yes. I don't know if we did that at Scout Mob. We may have.
Okay.
But there was a separate performance art piece that happened
with
that artist, who I have a piece of hers in my house, but
cool.
I can't recollect her name.
Oh,
it's
okay.
My mind is failing me right now.
That's okay.
She's an Atlanta artist, though.
Okay.
Yeah,
I remember being really fucked up and watching that happen.
Yeah.
Like, this is
so deep.
I love it here, dude.
Rolling around on peaches.
Yeah.
Who would do that?
Yeah. Oh, it's because we're in Georgia. Oh.
Yeah, there's some gender politics in there somewhere too, I'm sure.
Oh,
yeah.
I hope so.
makes you think and laugh sometimes.
That's my favorite combination of things to do. Okay, so you guys are starting to hit your groove. You're throwing some big parties with massive turnouts.
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a moment where you were like, this is getting out of hand? Or was it always like, hell yeah, this is what we want?
No, it was like, yeah, this is what we want, because we didn't always focus on the largest things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our curation was all about what we thought was the group of people who were deciding what they thought was the most interesting. So, because we don't take tickets.
Yeah. Like,
we don't make money off of any of it. We actually fund all of the programs mm-hmm. through our arts investment package, where we help with production and marketing and staffing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the artist has more time to focus on the work.
Yeah.
And they get to earn more from the door or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a lot of small stuff, like a 20-person noise show that was like recording the sound of the train tracks and blasting it into the venue was just as successful to us as, you know, a 3,000-person Halloween show, right?
Yeah.
So, no, I think we were really happy with where we were going. And then we branched out and started doing events and programs around town.
Mm-hmm.
We did dumpsters downtown.
Yeah.
Right, where we got 10, you know, trash dumpsters, roll-away trash dumpsters, and we curated artists and put them all around downtown.
I remember that.
Yeah, awesome. And did performances and exhibitions in them and stuff.
Yeah.
For Elevate. That was for Elevate.
Okay.
And, yeah, we did, when Creative Loafing was still, you know, printing their paper magazine.
Yes.
Back in the day, we did the Best Of parties.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, downtown.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we had that sci-fi futurism party down on Broad Street.
Oh, Broad Street.
Yeah.
One day.
Well, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
That may come again. You never know.
People keep it's like trying to make Fetch happen. I'm like, one day it's going to stick.
Yeah.
There's so much potential.
Yeah, the German guy who bought it all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, from under all those artists that were there. He bought, like, the entirety of South Downtown. He mm-hmm. just failed and sold it all to the people who started Atlanta Tech Village.
Okay.
And they've got from my point of view at least, I think they have the right take it slow, one at a time,
yeah.
no expectations kind of approach,
yeah.
rather than the top-down kind of let's do it big and, you know, yeah, like the German guy had. It was his idea.
Right.
Didn't work.
That makes sense. Are there any insane stories or controversies or drama or anything that, like, you're like, you don't know the goat farm unless you know about X?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'd have to think about that question. You don't know the goat farm if you, I mean,
what's got you chuckling?
There are just, like, moments. Like, it's like smoking hookah with Gucci Mane at the War Horse. Or
that's cool.
Eating chicken wings with Captain Dave, who was the captain chief of the fire station, the late Captain Dave. And then having the Golden Girls show up and start dancing.
That's awesome.
Like, there was a photo shoot. And, there, you know, just random stuff like that happened all the time. You know, you never knew what was going to happen in any given day.
Yeah.
You know, it was exciting and spontaneous and kind of like a wild, wild west.
Yeah.
You know, you could kind of do anything.
Love that.
Yeah. And I can't remember, I can't think of a specific thing, though.
Yeah, that's okay. What are some of, so when I think of things that have been filmed there, I immediately think of The Walking Dead.
Yep.
What are some other big things people may not know that were filmed there?
The Hunger Games.
Oh.
Yeah, they did I think it was the first one, maybe the second one, I don't know, the third one.
Okay.
One of them, but they were there for several months.
That's
and then King Bolden, about a jazz musician.
Oh, I don't know.
They, like, built an entire street out there. I think one of our Halloween parties was in that set.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, and it was a small indie movie. It's called King Bolden.
Okay.
And then there's a movie back in the 90s called California.
Okay.
I think Brad Pitt was in it and David Duchovny.
Okay.
They were in it and I always forget the actress's name, Natural Born Killers. what's her name?
Fuck.
Juliette Lewis.
Lewis,
yeah.
Yeah.
She was in it too, I think.
Cool.
What else? Need for Speed. Let's see. A bunch of TV shows and stuff.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
It's a good backdrop, you know.
Gorgeous backdrop.
Yeah, all the historic buildings, which are all staying in the new Goat Farm.
Yeah.
We're rebuilding all those.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay, so you just referenced the new Goat Farm. So from 2009 to 2019-ish, we were partying. We were hosting lots of amazing art things. It was just amazing kind of cultural hub. And then... walk us through this evolution, please.
Yeah, so we were doing running the numbers in 2016.
Okay.
And West Midtown by that point had grown a lot.
Yeah.
From where it started, where we started, and so our taxes were going up. And so we realized in about 5 to 6 years, like what we had on the property would no longer be able to pay our taxes.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So we were faced with a decision at that point when we realized we could no longer do what we were currently doing in about 5-6 years. So the decision was, well, we could sell it, right, and go buy something somewhere else and just try again.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could find a partner, because we're a small team, to help us add density, right, or add people to the property, which could then help us afford to... pay taxes or grow, right? We could grow rather than kind of abandoning the place. And so we chose the latter path. We decided to stick it out, you know, and we dated development partners.
Yeah.
Lots of them. And we finally, because we wanted them to believe in the mission.
Yeah.
The arts mission that we have. And we finally found Tribridge, who's a residential developer primarily. And they believed in the mission. And yeah, we partnered with them in 2018 and then, started construction in 2019, 2020, and the pandemic hit. And then prices went up, and then the supply chains all halted, and inflation. So it was it wasn't a smooth transition by any means, but we made it. We're here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what can people expect out of Goat Farm 2.0?
Yeah. Yeah, so we open our first building on April 1st, 2024.
Yeah, and that's when Nick's going to be in?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
That's when Nick and Soundspace move into their two studios.
Yay.
And we have three new buildings total, and then we have all the historic buildings that'll be renovated next year.
Okay.
But we open April 1st, and then we on a rolling basis through the end of July.
Okay.
And we have around 200 apartments and 50 art studios. Cool. Most of the art studios are already rented to prior tenants.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so last summer we sent an email to all of our prior tenants asking them to come back, and they had first dibs on the art studios, and a lot of them took us up on it, and we were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And there's like a moment then when, you know, we've been working for years now kind of in a black hole, right, where we haven't shared anything with the outside world, and we've got all these plans for the place and the design, and, you know, and then we have to invite people in. You know, and as a creative, you probably understand what that's like.
Absolutely.
Where, like, you've spent all this time and energy and thought, and, you know, you then invite people to, you know, experience it, and there's just a bundle of nerves.
Yeah.
Right? That you're just like, did we do it right? Or, you know, is this okay? Is that okay? Are they going to like it?
Yeah.
We were really pleasantly surprised when a lot of those people decided to come back.
I bet.
And some didn't. They moved on, or, you know, they already had places or whatever. And then the apartments, everyone's loved them so far. They're very minimalist, but have tons of natural light. And then there's details everywhere. You know, we have a whole bunch of art installations that are starting to go in this month. Many, which is a program, our first program, which is an annual program, where we give 10 artists $1,000 each, and they create a really tiny sculpture that then is a permanent sculpture on the property.
That. Cool.
And so over like 5-10 years, you have like 50 or 100 of these all around the goat farm, and there'll be a map.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. In addition to our larger full-scale installations.
Sure.
And there's a whole bunch of like works on loan that'll be inside.
Okay.
The interior. Yeah.
Cool.
That's that. And then the old historic buildings renovated this year and next. Can't really talk about those much because we're under NDA, but it'll be exciting when we can announce that.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. Yeah.
And then there'll be a restaurant bar, and then our venue will open next year.
Okay.
Yep.
So we'll go back to partying. We'll go back to hosting fun events and all of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Just kind of goat farm all grown up.
That's right. It'll be, you know, we'll be a little bit more buttoned up. We'll have a little bit more money than we used to.
Nice.
You know, I won't be hanging or running extension cords and hanging lights anymore.
Yeah. Make Nick do it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because, you know, our funding, our social business model is we take a little bit, of everyone's rent, and that goes to fund the arts. Now we have a whole lot more people on the property,
yeah.
So there's a little bit more of everyone's rent.
Yeah,
great. So we'll have more money to spend on art and artists. We have residency programs that that funds as well through the Creatives Project. Fall Line Press, they're a photography book publisher in Atlanta. And it's rare for like a book publisher these days to have an actual store.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's part of their mission. And so they're going to have a shop there. I think on April 11th, they're going to have a few authors come by and do signings and talks. But they're also opening, hopefully, some kind of larger bookshop, coffee shop concept.
Ooh, okay. Still is the Warhorse still there?
It won't be, but this coffee shop, bookshop kind of concept will kind of take its place.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a fond memory of the Warhorse.
Yes.
Nick hosted an open mic night there years ago, and I performed an acoustic version of the theme song to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Nice. I think I probably saw that.
I do remember it. It was actually awesome. Yeah. Like, it went so well, and it was so much fun.
It sounds great. You can do it now. I see a guitar right here.
Oh, my gosh.
Do it. Do it. Everyone wants to hear it.
You know, as much as I would love to, that guitar actually needs to be restrung. It's kind of...
Luckily, I know how to do that.
Oh, did you bring strings?
No.
Oh, no. Wow.
Okay. Well, on your next episode. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, guys. Mm-hmm. It was so lovely, though, because I think it's fun to have small, intimate spaces where, like, normal people can do things like that.
Yeah. And, that's what we focus on mostly is, like, experimental works, right? People just kind of, like, touching on the weird or the extreme, but we do have those accessible shows and we like to insert the weird into it.
Yeah.
So we like bring people in who are like going to a concert that you would, you know, normal people would go to. And then we like, we hit you with a little bit of like experimental art and hopefully that like you like it and then you come see something else.
Yeah. Has anything ever gone horribly wrong with an experimental art show?
I mean, we've caught stuff on fire.
Yeah.
I'm sure there has. I can't, off the top of my head, there was a, well, this wasn't an experimental art show, but it was a, like a food event or something. Taste, All-Star Tastes of Atlanta or something like that.
Okay.
And it was outside and they didn't have a rain plan.
Ooh.
And it just started pouring. And they had this really nice, eight-piece jazz band.
Uh-huh.
And so the entire event piled into the Warhorse.
Oh, my God.
Everyone was soaking wet.
Uh-huh.
And it was June, so it was, like, steamy, you know?
Yeah.
And those big, huge windows that opened.
Yeah.
And the jazz band was in there, and they were playing, and people were, like, drinking wine out the windows in the rain, right? And everyone was dancing.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was a wild time. Horribly wrong, but in the end, we pulled it out, you know?
Yeah. I remember a Killer Tomato Fest where it started raining and we were just like, ah, fuck it. And we just were soaked wet and just walking around and having a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, that actress who was in a bath of milk.
Yeah.
It was October and it was cold.
Oh,
and
my
that
God.
Milk was cold.
Oh, my God.
She was freezing.
Oh.
So we had to take her out, extract her from that and warm her up,
I'm
repaint her.
One of those claws at the arcade just coming in and reaching out for her.
Oh, she's a sport, though.
Seriously.
But no, I don't think anything went, like, massively
wrong. Deaths. Nobody's drowned in a bucket of milk.
No, nothing like that. I mean, we had some, like, there was a French artist that was in town for Living Walls when we did that over there. And, you know, he had other work in the city going on, and he was supposed to do something for the Living Walls closing party.
Uh-huh.
And he just didn't find the time, so at the very last minute, like the morning of the event, he came by, mixed up a bag of concrete and spread it on a wall and wrote concrete jingle. And it's just like the worst piece. It's just awful. And it wasn't even dry by the time they even took place.
It's like it's interactive.
Yeah, we ended up covering it up with just a huge door.
Oh my God.
There's weird
Merci
stuff.
Merci beaucoup.
Yeah, weird stuff like that that happens.
That's so funny. So how does it feel to start off in 2009 farming there?
Yeah, yeah.
And now being a partner in this awesome, huge endeavor?
Fortunate. Yeah, very fortunate
to
participate in that with everybody and, you know, be along for this ride. Mm-hmm. And it actually helped me get my degree and, you know.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and grow. Now I started there right back from the Peace Corps, mm-hmm. and now I have a family, you know, so
yeah.
you know, I've gone through several life transitions
while
working there. So, it feels good. I wish we could expand it to other places, but that's all dependent on how well this goes.
That's fair.
Yeah, because this is like the first time that institutional level investors have been part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to prove to them that this arts model, this social enterprise model works.
Yeah.
Can work.
Yeah.
Just as good as any other, you know, apartment complex that they would invest in.
Right.
And so that takes people renting from us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're right in the middle of trying to prove that it works.
Yeah.
And if it does, then hopefully we can do it at other places.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think something would have to go terribly wrong for you guys to not crush it, just knowing portions of this journey.
Yeah, it's about getting the word out. You know,
yeah.
we tend to be a little bit more humble about things and not want to brag. Or...
Well, I'll help brag for you. So.
We tend not to like to do that. So
yeah.
It's about getting the word out now and telling people that we have apartments and art studios to rent starting April 1st.
Okay.
We're renting now.
Okay.
So you can just go to goatfarmatl.com and tell them Mark sent you, I guess.
Okay. Goatfarmatl.com. Mark sent you via Clover Club.
Clover Club. That's right. I heard it on a podcast.
Very important. What are the social media pages? Like drop all the
Oh, yeah. At the Goat Farm.
Okay.
And I think we have a Facebook. I don't think we have a TikTok.
Okay.
But yeah, Instagram at the Goat Farm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. And Mark, thank you so, so much for your time. Please check out the Goat Farm. Come to some events. Tell your friends. This is an amazing project and it's really a gem in Atlanta. And it's been an absolute pleasure to give some light on that on today's episode. As always, Clover Club listeners get 10% off at hawkinsandclover.com with promo code CloverClub, all caps. And you can find us on social media at Clover Club Pod. And we will look forward to hearing you next week. Mark, thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Perfect.